Matthew. So Matthew is in the second part of the Bible, the New Testament, the first book. We're going to read at chapter 18 from the beginning of that chapter. It is Matthew chapter 18. Within this record of the life of Jesus, within this gospel, there are four main sections of teaching that Jesus communicates. There are five main sections of teaching. This is number four. That's why I was getting confused. It's a great start to the day. And so in this chapter, we've got a whole host of teaching that Jesus gives as to how he wants his people to live. And so that's the context of what we're going to be thinking of for the next couple of weeks as we examine chapter 18. So let's remind ourselves, this is the word of the living God. Verse 1. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" He called a little child to them and placed the child among them. And he said, "Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. If anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of the things that cause people to stumble. Some such things must come, but woe to the person through whom they come. If your hand or foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It's better for you to enter life maimed or crippled than to have two hands or two feet and be thrown into eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be thrown into the fire of hell. See that you do not despise one of these little ones, for I tell you that their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven. What do you think? If a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 on the hills and go off and look for the one that wandered? And if he finds it, truly I tell you, he is happier about that one sheep than about the 99 that did not wander off. In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should perish. We're going to leave our reading there for the moment. We're going to return to it later in our service. Please do turn back in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 18 this morning. Matthew 18. To the words that Jesus spoke from the beginning of this chapter, Matthew chapter 18. If you haven't read chapter 18 ever, or you haven't read it for a long time, then there is a sense of just a tumbleweed moment, is there not, when you read what the disciples actually asked Jesus. Because they come to him, and they come with this question, "So then, Jesus, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Lying behind that is the answer that they expect. They expect that one of them is going to be pointed out by Jesus as the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And when they're asking that, and we think to ourselves, you're asking Jesus, the guy whose actions and whose words point us in the direction that he is not from around here. He is God that has come to live among us. You're asking him, which of you is the greatest? I mean, confidence is one thing, but delusion is entirely something different. Is that not the case? Well, as we think of this question, I'm sure that some of us would be very similar in thinking back to different parts of our own lives where we have said things or done things that now we just cringe over. And that would be the way it is for, no doubt, these disciples in years to come, as they would have this record of what took place, and they'd be going, "Oh, do you remember that day? Do you remember that day we asked Jesus who was the greatest? Do you remember that day we were so obsessed with this? I mean, yes, we'd seen Jesus' glory being radiated, some of us, on the top of the mountain, and we saw Jesus heal people, and we saw things that other people didn't. But, you know, and we know that Peter was able to walk on water, some of the rest of us couldn't, and Peter was sent to catch this fish. Inside this fish there was this coin. We know all these things, but really, we shouldn't have asked that question, should we? Because what was going on here is that the disciples were out of sync with Jesus. Jesus had been very clear to them in the preceding verses of the previous chapter that his mission is on track. God's mission is on track. He's going to be delivered in the hands of evil men. He's going to be killed. He's going to rise again. But that's on track. And they are just in an entirely different level. They're like a little child coming to a parent and pestering and stomping his or her feet and demanding that they get a snack right this instant, or demanding that they get a toy right this instant, not knowing that the parent knows that a meal is about to be served or that a gift is about to be given. They just don't get it. They're in a different wavelength, children, to their parents at times. That's exactly what's going on here. The disciples, they're in a different wavelength to where Jesus actually is, because they are focused on things that are not that important. Now, before we think we're superior to these disciples, let's realize that actually we're very similar to these disciples. Because actually we can be so taken up with the peripherals of life, of even the peripherals of the Christian life, because we know there are fundamentals, there are essentials within the Christian life. There are things of primary, of first importance. We know there are things that are less important. We know that there are things that are even less important. But sometimes that's what we focus on, is it not? Sometimes it's the peripherals of our faith, or it's the peripherals of life that our attention's been taken up by, rather than the centrality of the mission that God has given to us. If Jesus' mission was to be sent out to seek and to save the lost, our mission is to go out and to make disciples of all nations. As we go, we make disciples. We baptize them. We teach them. That's our mission. But our focus can be on the peripherals, isn't it? And we can be so out of sync ourselves from the mission of Jesus. And so today we're going to be thinking about how Jesus brought his disciples back to focus on the core spiritual realities, so that if I or if you have maybe been focusing on the peripherals, we then focus ourselves on the core spiritual realities that Jesus wants us to be aware of. Well, what are they? Well, the first is this, that everyone needs to be changed. Everybody needs to be changed. That's what Jesus is teaching in the first part of this chapter here. He says, "Truly I tell you," verse 3, "unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." If I ask the question, who is the greatest? Some people may come with different answers. Well, I'm sure we'd all come with maybe different answers. Some might quote Muhammad Ali. Was he not the guy who declared himself to be the greatest? Well, he did. Others have been foolish enough to do something similar. When Jesus asked the question, who is the greatest, he has actually given the answer to that question earlier on in this book. You may recall that in Matthew chapter 11, verse 11, Jesus said, "Among those born of woman, there's no one greater than who? Than John the Baptist." So Ali may think he's the greatest that's walked on this earth. He's deluded. Jesus says, among those who've been born of woman up until that point, John the Baptist is the greatest. The problem is not necessarily the question. The problem is what lies behind the question. Because it's in Jesus' answer that some uncomfortable truths come to us. And as we think of these truths, always bear in mind the context. We are dealing with the individual who was caring, who was truthful, who was honest, who was compassionate. That's who we're dealing with. And yet this caring, truthful, honest, compassionate individual, he is the one who does not hold back when he needs to communicate a message. He comes with his truth, and he delivers that truth. And so even when the truth is uncomfortable, that doesn't negate or counterbalance or counteract his care or his love or his compassion. No, it's all part of it. And so he comes and he says to them that really they need to learn a visual as well as a theological lesson. He takes a child among them. And the child must have looked really insignificant and inferior in comparison to the grown men that were round about. And that was exactly Jesus' point. And Jesus' point is this: you need to stop focusing on being exalted within the kingdom. You need to stop focusing on your eminence within the kingdom. You need to start focusing on your entrance to actually get into the kingdom in the very first place, because your focus is completely out of sync. And that answer of Jesus reverberates down the generations to this morning, because it tells us that every single individual who has ever been born needs to exhibit a particular characteristic before they will ever enter the kingdom of heaven, before they will ever come to know God in a personal personal way in which we're part of the family, before we can know and trust and love Jesus, that a certain characteristic has to be present. And that characteristic is humility. Now, humility, for many folks, it just speaks of weakness. Muhammad Ali, again, he quotes himself as being the greatest. He's wrong again in this one. He says, "Humble people, I've found, don't tend to go very far." So Ali says, Jesus says something very different. Jesus says that this characteristic is what's required for everybody for them to enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, let's be clear. This is not a character trait that some people have lying within them that other people don't. It's not that there's the introverts among us have this humility there in a greater way than the extroverts among us. Because what Jesus is speaking about here is something that is a supernatural quality, because it is something that reflects the character of Jesus himself. If you want to know about the humility of Jesus, read later on in the Bible one of the letters, Philippians, and read chapter 2. Because in these words, we're confronted by the humility of Jesus. So this supernatural quality is a quality that has God in that place of priority, as Jesus at the center of our lives, whereby we see ourselves and we see God as we ought to. We see ourselves as we ought. In that, we don't realize that we're coming before God thinking we are magnificent or thinking that we have a whole host of things to offer to God. But like this little child coming before the Jesus and before these grown men, this child had nothing to offer. We always must remember when Jesus speaks about little children in this context, little children back in Jesus' day were not looked after the way they are today. Little children back then were the lowest of the social order. They were people who were looked at, they need everything, they give nothing. What's the use of them? Until they reach a stage in life when they can start actually working or earning or having some kind of usefulness. They were not cared for or looked after in the way they are today. In fact, if you want to find out as to when and where and how this change and how children were viewed, how that came about, check the history of the Christian faith. Because one of the legacies of the impact of the teaching of Jesus has been the way in which children are cared for. Just as another legacy is the way in which women have a freedom that they never had beforehand. There's many legacies of the Christian faith. That's just two of them. But so when Jesus takes these little children, this little child before him, he's not talking about, oh, look how innocent this child is. Jesus knew children aren't innocent. Were you innocent as a child? I know I certainly wasn't, and anybody that knew me as a child knew I certainly wasn't. We're not talking innocence here. We're talking the fact that they were lowly, that they had nothing, and yet they were unconcerned about their state, about their social status in that sense. And so how do we view ourselves? Do we view ourselves in that same light? Because like these children who need everything, well, we need everything from God, don't we? We can't make the sun rise in the morning. We can't make the rain fall. We saw that recently in Australia, how desperate the Australians were for rain when all these fires were ravaging the countryside. We can't make the sun rise. We can't make the rain fall. We can't give life, and we can't stop death. We can't be given new life. We can't wake up one morning and decide things are going to be different. We can't. We need God to change us. We need God for everything. We need everything. What can we give to God that God needs? Nothing. There's nothing that you possess currently that God needs. There's no lack in God that we can somehow supply. So we need everything. We can give nothing. That's the way we are spiritually before God. So instead of thinking that we're somehow great and that we're significant and that we've been able to do things or we've been able to see things like the disciples are, we're seeing ourselves in a very different light. Now, humility is very different to having a really low self-esteem. People get this confused that to be humble, you need to be really down on yourself, that we somehow need to... ignore any gifts that God may have given to us or any talents or anything of that order. Humility and low self-esteem are not the same thing, because humility has God at the center. Because humility speaks of being willing to decrease so that Jesus can increase within us. Humility speaks of our life as individuals, as grown-ups, as kids, our life, our Christian lives, our service, our witness, our ministry, that we're not the focus, that Jesus has to be. And if he's not, we're missing the mark. And so what Jesus is teaching here by taking this little child among these disciples, he's saying to them, forget about eminence. Forget about exaltation. The key thing is we need to make sure we've been changed. That in John chapter 3, he talks about needing to be born again. In Matthew 18 here, he's telling us about becoming like little children. There has to be a transformation whereby we turn from how we've previously lived and we start trusting in Jesus, where we repent and now believe, where we see our need, our helpless need of everything, that we can do nothing to save ourselves, and we come before God and we say, I've got nothing. I can only ask for your mercy and for your forgiveness. And that's what God offers us. And so Jesus here is saying to us that everybody needs to be changed. So instead of trying to see ourselves as others see us, as Robbie Burns would go on about, we need to see ourselves as God sees us. And that is the key application from this initial teaching. Everybody needs to be changed. So you need to be changed, I need to be changed. How does God view us? Has that change taken place? If not, you're in a really serious situation. That transformation must happen. Otherwise, you will not know what it is to know Jesus as Lord, as Savior, as your hope, as the one who has secured your freedom, who offers you forgiveness, who makes you part of the family. Without that transformation, you don't have that. If we have had that transformation, well, maybe the application for us is that we're reminded of that transformation. That we have nothing. We need everything. Greatness is not a concern for us. Dependence is. So the first spiritual reality that Jesus speaks of in this passage here is the fact that everybody needs to be changed. The second spiritual reality that Jesus therefore goes on to speak about is that everybody who knows God is ultimately safe. Everybody who knows God is ultimately safe. Iceland, way up in the Atlantic there, is classed as the safest nation on Earth. I can't remember, is it 11 or 12 years in the trot? It has come top of all the nations in the world that this is the safest one. And it may be safe for a whole host of reasons, we don't need to go into that. But if we're thinking of places that are safe, let's always remind ourselves that being part of the kingdom of Jesus is actually even safer. Because the greatest security detail that has ever existed is looking after us. Through all the commentators speaking about what Harry and Meghan may or may not do moving forward, one issue that keeps coming back is this: who pays to protect them? Is it the British government? Is it the taxpayer? Is it the Canadians? Is it the Americans? Who's going to pay to protect them? Well, if you're part of the ultimate family, if you are part of the kingdom of King Jesus, then security for you, it has been paid, and it is on 24-hour watch. And it's on 24-hour watch, not because you're living in a place where there's no troubles. There are troubles. There's multiple troubles. There's multiple dangers. This passage here talks about some of the dangers that are present. It goes on here. It talks about those who may cause the people of God to stumble, to fall, to sin, to be at a distance from God. It talks here about these little children, all who have come to know and to love Jesus, come with that characteristic, that quality of dependence, of lowliness, of humility, unconcerned about their social status. They're all little children if they belong to God. But there will be people who will try and cause difficulty. There will be people who will try and cause them to stumble, who will try and cause them to fall. And in that environment, in that arena, we're told here that there are consequences for those who try and cause trouble for the people of God, as well as this security that is ongoing for the people of God throughout. So the consequences are quite stark. It talks here about the individuals who are causing people to stumble. If they carry on doing with that, then there's a place that is reserved for them, given to us in verse 9. It's talked about the fire of hell. And it's talked in verse 8 as being a place that you don't go to for a little bit of time and then somehow escape from. It talks about being a place that's eternal, that's everlasting. So we're talking here about the ultimate punishment of an everlasting experience in the fires of hell, says Jesus. Remember what I said? He's the most caring, compassionate, loving, yet truthful individual who ever walked on this earth. He's telling us that this place exists. And that people who will be in this place, some will be there because they're going out of their way to harm the people of God. They're going out of their way to persecute the people of God, out of their way to somehow intimidate others to follow this God that's found in Jesus Christ, doing everything they possibly can to undermine the Christian faith, the message of hope that there's to be found in Jesus, anything that causes people to stumble, then Jesus says very solemnly, this place exists. But here's when it gets even more uncomfortable. It gets more uncomfortable because the things that cause people to stumble, if only that came from outside the church. If only that came from outside the people of God. But sometimes it comes from inside the people of God. Sometimes the people of God can make following Jesus so unappealing that it turns people away. Because they can encounter us in our moments of bitterness. And they can encounter us in our moments of constant negativity. And they can encounter us in our moments of backbiting or gossiping or any of these things. And they're going, what do I want to do with the Christian faith? Why would I want to have anything to do with Christian faith if that's what it's all about? And there's none of us in here who have followed Jesus who can sit back or stand as in my case and say, well, I've never been bitter, or I've never gossiped, Or I've never been so negative about the people of God and that's caused struggles for others. We have. Because we have an impact upon others. And it's the impact that Jesus is speaking about here. Because he says, if it's your hand or your foot that's causing you to stumble, cut it off. Now he's not talking about self-harm. He's not talking about anything of the sort. He's talking about here, about being aware of things that we can do to harm others. And being aware of them. And trying to deal with them. Because the consequences are serious. So if you're one of those individuals who maybe in here today against your will, or maybe you're watching this live online and you make it your thing to just demean Christians, to make their life difficult, to somehow expose what you see as the lies, stop people from following after Jesus. It's a very serious thing to do. But likewise, those of us in here who are part of the family of faith, as we have to look at ourselves and see what is it that we're harboring. What are we tempted to fall into by way of sin that may have an impact adversely on others? That it's serious. So into that arena where there are dangers, we're told here that God is one who is active in his security. Not simply do we have the angelic force in action. That's what verse 10 tells us, that the angelic force is in action, that the ministering spirits sent out by God are operative. They're not passively sitting back, waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for an alarm to go. You know, you sometimes think of those whose job it is to wait. You think of those emergency services, perhaps at an airport or something, and day after day after day, they're going through their rituals, they're going through their routines, and then they're waiting for something to happen. At the one hand, they're waiting for something to happen, on the other hand, they're hoping nothing does happen, because if it does happen, it's going to be serious. Well, the angelic host are not simply waiting for a red light to somehow start flashing in the eternal courts to then come into action. The eternal angelic hosts are operative. Praise God that they are. One day we may find out just how operative they have been in our lives. But on top of that, it tells us here that the Father is active in his care of his people. This security detail are telling us that there's an active watch being taken of the people of God. And like a shepherd has an active watch over the sheep and is ensuring, well, okay, they were all there yesterday. I don't need to bother counting them today. No, we do need to count them. We need to see who's there, who's not there. That's what the analogy that Jesus is speaking about here. There's a sheep that's missing. There's only one that's missing, but such is the knowledge of this shepherd, that individual sheep, known by name, brought into existence by this God, is valued, is cared for, and is going to be brought back. So one is missing. May not be one of the loud ones, because it'd be quite obvious. Maybe one of the quiet ones, one on the periphery of the flock, but that's missing. God knows. And God knows how prone we can be to wandering. God knows how prone, in the same way a shepherd knows about a sheep, and the more the sheep kind of move to the periphery of the flock, then the more likelihood that they can be picked off or they can find themselves in all manner of danger. God knows, he remembers that we are dust. He knows that we're prone to wander, hence he's watching over us. Hence anyone that's missing, he knows. And he goes out of his way to ensure that they're brought back. And you say, well, surely God's got enough to do. He's upholding the whole universe. He's letting the drama of history continue. Surely God doesn't have enough time to focus on individuals that have gone missing or have stumbled because of the actions of others or are in difficulty. Well, he does. He does. And he will go and he will find and he will rescue and he will rejoice. There will be nobody happier than the Father about the one who had wandered away and found themselves in all manner of danger. And so we're finding out here that the security detail that operates to look after all those who have been changed by the power of God, the security detail is constantly on the go, constantly watching, constantly going to look after those who are straying, to deal with those who are at a distance, there to ensure that we are safe no matter what, safe through the wilderness, safe through the valley of the shadow of death, safe when we pass through the waters and the rivers and through the fires, as Isaiah 43 tells us, to keep us as we go through all of these difficulties that this world brings. We have one who is with us to take us through. And so today, therefore, today, however weak you may feel, however targeted you may feel, however misunderstood you may think you are, however at a distance you have put yourself from God, and you say, yes, but Alistair, listen, but what I've done over these past months, these past years, I must have been a stumbling block to God's people. Because I knew the truth and I fell into this sin and I did this. And how can I be brought back? Well, you can be brought back because God's going to ensure you're brought back, because it's not the unforgivable sin. Because that sin, like every other sin, can be dealt with when we repent and we believe. And so if you find yourself today that you are at a distance from God, you are not where you know you should be. And outwardly, everything may be fine. Inwardly, you're miles away. Your heart, if it's beating, it's beating very, very slowly. It's very, very cold. God knows, and God cares, and He comes to ensure your safety, your security, even by bringing you here today to be reminded of the fact that He's watching over you. And if you're His, because He will bring you back, because when He starts a work in you, He's going to finish that work in you. You are safe today, completely, because of who God is. So if you've been at a distance, it's time to come home. The Father's waiting. And we all know, those of us who are in the family of faith, when we come home to the Father that's waiting, we're not met with a frown. We're not met with arms folded, with an eyebrow raised, with that look that just says, don't see anything. What are we met with? What does Jesus tell us? Luke chapter 15, we're met by a Father who's running towards us. It's time to come home if you've been away. It's time to come back, be part of the flock if you've been wandering. It's time to remember if you're weak today and just feel you can't carry on, you're not alone. He's with you. That security detail is watching over you and always will. Why? Because as Jesus says, not one of those who has been given to Him will be lost. You cannot be lost because you are safe in Jesus. So who's the greatest? Who's the greatest? Is it Ali? Is it one of you? Certainly not me. Who cares who the greatest is in one sense? Because what we need to focus on is the grace and the mercy that's found in Jesus Christ. Let's exalt Him as the great one. Let's look to Him. Let's keep looking to Him so that the spiritual realities of everyone needing to be changed and every one of God's people being safe, that these are key components of how we live our lives. We'll finish there.